Chapter 9. It was still dark when they arrived at the base. They were ordered out of the van at gunpoint by the base security police, and a couple of men immediately went inside to search it. The SPs were all regular personnel, but the sergeant of the guard was wearing a Cobra Force uniform and beret. He beckoned them over to the guardhouse. "This way, please." It felt funny to have the man say please when their automatic weapons were pointed at them. They were escorted into the guardhouse. "I'll have to ask you to strip," said the sergeant. The name over his breast pocket gave his name as Painter.
"I beg your pardon," said Sheila Blaine.
"Corporal Macy," said Sergeant Painter. A young female SP stepped forward. "Corporal Macy will take you into the bathroom, ma'am," he said. "I'm sorry, but the base is on high alert, and we have orders to strip search all visitors. Please don't make it difficult. We'll try to make it as quick and painless as possible."
"Go ahead, Sheila. It'll be okay," said Steele.
With a sullen look, the newswoman went with Corporal Macy.
"Okay, buddy," said the sergeant. "Strip!"
Steele took off the jacket he had borrowed from the cameraman with the station logo on it. He was thankful that he had remembered to use his knife to remove the name tag sewn over his breast pocket. He had expected to be searched, and he had carried no weapons, at least none that they'd be able to see. He just hoped that they wouldn't examine him too closely. He had to give the president a lot of credit for realizing that Cord wanting a news crew brought in would provide an excellent opportunity for him to slip inside the base. If he managed to pull this off, he'd have to remember to thank the man. Now, if only no one recognized him. The sergeant frowned when he took off his jacket.
"Those look like military fatigues," he said.
"Police surplus," Steele said with a shrug. "The station only buys these fancy jumpsuits for the on-camera reporters. These are comfortable on assignment, and they got a lot of pockets."
"I see."
"Yeah," he continued as he stripped down. "They had some other guy's name on them, so I just tore it off. Listen, you wouldn't know where I could get another one of those tags made up with my name on it, would you?"
"Why, so you can tell the girls how you saw some action in the service?"
Steele grinned sheepishly.
"Yeah, something like that."
The sergeant grimaced.
"You wannabes make me puke. You all want to dress up and play soldier, but you ain't got the balls to enlist." "Hey, come on. Give me a break," said Steele. "I got a wife and kids."
"So do I," said the sergeant. "Only I'm doing something to see that my kids get to grow up in a better country. What's your excuse?"
Steele looked properly humble and said nothing. A couple of the other soldiers were going through his clothes. Steele was glad he remembered to relieve the cameraman of some of his personal effects, like the roll of black electrical tape, the Swiss Army knife, the little combination tool with the pliers and the wire coders and stripper and a few other odds and ends to make his cover more convincing.
"He's clean."
"All right,"
said Sergeant Painter.
"Bend over."
"What?"
"You heard me. Bend over and spread your cheeks."
"Oh, come on, for Christ's sake."
"I ain't interested in your fucking asshole," said the sergeant.
"Just anything you might have stuffed up it. Now bend over or I'll bend you over." "Oh, for crying out loud.
Jaworski?"
Private Jaworski looked stricken.
"Oh, geez, Sarge, do I have to?"
Painter simply glared at him.
"I ain't got any gloves."
"So you can wash your hands after. Now do it."
"Oh, man."
Steele gritted his teeth as he submitted to the indignity.
"Oh, Jesus," moaned Jaworski, grimacing with distaste.
"Okay, Jaworski, go wash your little hands," said Painter. "All right, buddy, you can put your clothes back on."
Steele got dressed. Sheila came back out a few moments later looking furious. She gave Painter a look that would have withered a redwood.
"Can we go now?" she said.
"Yeah, you can go," said Painter. "Anderson, ride in with them."
The SP named Anderson got in the van with them, and they drove onto the base. They pulled up in front of one of the brick buildings, and a Cobra colonel came out to meet them.
"My name is Colonel Tyler," he said. "The general won't be ready to see you until after Reveille. He's going to address the troops during formation, and I think you'll want to cover that. You need anything to set up?"
"No, we can handle it," said Sheila.
"Well, since you've got some time to kill, would you like some coffee?"
She glanced at Steele.
"Yeah, sure. Why not?"
he said. Tyler gave him a curious look.
"Haven't I seen you before?"
Oh, hell, thought Steele.
John's been on camera, said Sheila. He doubles as a crime reporter on the Strip. Maybe you saw that piece he did last month on the gay prostitute killings.
Tyler grimaced.
I must have missed that one, he said wryly. If you'll follow me, please.
He turned and started walking toward the officer's mess.
That was quick thinking,
Steele whispered to her.
I figured it might throw him off if he remembers he saw you on TV, she said. You should have worn a hat or something.
Well, it's been a while, said Steele, but I'll try to stay in the background and keep my head down. You just keep doing all the talking. You're doing fine.
I'm scared shitless.
Hang in there! Just have some coffee and make nice with the colonel. Flirt with him. Keep his mind off me.
I'll try.
Inside the club, they were led to a table. Sheila sidled up to Tyler and smiled prettily.
I've never met a man and an officer in the Cobra Force before, she said. You must have had some fascinating experiences.
I've got my share of war stories,
Tyler said, smiling back.
Maybe we could do an interview, add some color to the segment.
She gave Tyler some deep eye contact, then turned to Steele.
Johnny, be a love. I forgot my notebook in the van. Why don't you go run a quick check on the dish while you're at it? Save some time later.
Yeah, sure.
He paused briefly at the door and glanced back toward the table. Tyler was sitting at his back with his back to him, and Sheila was running her foot along his calf. He smiled, then turned and went out the door. It was almost dawn. Higgins sat in the cab of the 4x4, smoking his 20th cigarette in a row. He was dressed in a ratty-looking denim and a red bandana around his forehead, with two polymer ceramic double-action Demon 45s hanging upside down in shoulder holsters beneath his armpits, and an AK-47 resting across his lap. He had a harness strapped across his chest holding spare magazines and grenades, and a knife strapped to his leg. Hardesty was behind the wheel, similarly dressed and wearing a baseball cap. He sat smoking his cigar, looking ridiculously calm. Jesus, thought Higgins. How long has it been since I've done anything like this? Hell, he'd never done anything like this. He hadn't been in combat in years, and back then, he'd been properly dressed for it. In a battle suit and helmet, not in some redneck trucker outfit. Even with the bloody armor on underneath his flannel, he felt naked. After the briefing, not a few of the volunteers had experienced a sudden change of mind and professed a strong desire to leave, but Snake had put a quick stop to that. He'd calmly approached the most vocal of the dissenters, smiled and said,
"You want to go?"
"Fuck yeah, I want to go! Ain't nobody told us!"
But he had never gotten any further than that because Snake had plunged a Bowie knife deep into his stomach and jerked up on it, lifting the man right off the ground. Then he pulled the knife out, watched the man collapse, and wiped the blade on his shirt, and straightened up without any show of emotion whatsoever.
All right, he's gone. Anybody else want to go?
There were no takers. Crazy, Higgins thought. That fucker was stone-cold, hardcore crazy. But he sure knew how to motivate people. Even with the fear of the bikers and being 2,000 miles away from home, not a few of the people they'd brought with them had deserted after they'd landed, melting away into the darkness while they were unloading the big C-17s. And predictably, the bikers had refused to listen to anything he had to say.
Just get us out there, and then get the fuck out of our way, Snake had said.
Higgins hadn't expected to have to take that literally, but that was precisely what the man had meant. He and Peacemaker had their own ideas about how to assault the base, and they weren't interested in anything that Higgins had to say. In fact, Higgins and Hardesty had found themselves taking orders.
Your people are going to be the second wave,
Snake had said.
The minute we reach the base perimeter, you hit it. Ice, your group swings in from the left flank. Higgins, you and Hardesty take the right. Bishop, you and your volunteers come down the middle, right on our heels. And everybody hits in full tilt boogie. Nobody slows down or stops. Got it? Nobody. We're gonna need the speed.
Now, wait a minute, Snake, Higgins had said. You can't expect to attack the base like a bunch of damned Indians on motorcycles, for Christ's sakes. We've got to set up interdicting fire and deploy the...
Deploy your ass, man! We'll do it my way! Your way will fucking take all day and give them a chance to set up. We hit them hard and we hit them fast. Put the boots to them. That's the way to beat superior odds, man. You psych them. Strike terror into their fucking hearts and roll right over them.
You won't be rolling over anybody that way, Higgins had said. With those damn straight pipes on your bikes, they'll have a field of fire set up to cut you down before you get within 1,000 yards of the perimeter.
I ain't fucking stupid, man. You just sit back and watch. I'll show you how it's done.
And that was that. But Snake had thought it out a bit more carefully than Higgins had suspected. He had sent out a party of sappers, their faces blackened with dirt, carrying explosive charges, knives, and silenced pistols. Then, under the cover of darkness, the bikers had started pushing their motorcycles toward the base. And now Higgins sat there with the second wave, waiting for the gray light of dawn, waiting to see if this desperate, crazy gamble would pay off. "You think Steele got through okay?" he asked Hardesty.
"He got through!"
I wish I had your faith, Jake. Hardesty grunted.
"It ain't faith! I just know Steele!"
Higgins tossed his cigarette butt out the open window and squinted through the slit in the armor plate welded to the front of the truck. Dawn was breaking. Private Sloan was bored and tired. He hated night sentry duty. Nothing to do but walk his post back and forth all night. He wasn't supposed to be smoking, but fuck it. It was almost dawn, and he could hold the butt with his hand cupped around it so the glow wouldn't give him away. He slung his rifle and took out his cigarettes. He struck one in his mouth.
"Psst! Got a light?"
Sloan spun around, his mouth open. A blade flashed, and he felt a sudden searing pain, as if somebody had drawn a white-hot wire across his throat. He tried to scream, but all that came out was a horrible croaking gurgle as the huge Bowie slashed his throat from ear to ear. He collapsed to the ground. The last thing he heard was a soft whisper saying,
"Smoking's hazardous to your health, man."
A bugle sounded. Reluctantly, Colonel Tyler tore himself away from Sheila. They were kissing against the wall behind the officers' club. He pulled his hand out from out inside her open jumpsuit, where it had been fondling her breast, and sighed.
"Shit, that's Reveille." "Is that what that was?"
murmured Sheila. He kissed her once more. Hard.
"We'll have to finish this later, sweetheart. I've got to go and meet my general. By the way, whatever happened to your cameraman?" "Oh, he's probably making some last-minute adjustments to the equipment, getting the transmission set up on all that technical stuff." "You never did bring back your notebook." "Yeah, I guess he forgot." She smiled. "Too bad, huh?"
Tyler chuckled and kissed her again.
"Damn, you're sexy,"
he said.
"So are you. We are going to finish this,"
he said.
"Yeah, but you're leaving me for a general,"
she said, pouting.
"Duty calls. Behold my place."
She dropped her hand down to his crotch and squeezed gently.
"Like this? Ooh, baby, don't do that,"
he said.
"Not now, please. It ain't fair. It just ain't fair." "All's fair in love and war," she said. "I gotta go."
He kissed her again, plunging his tongue deep into her mouth.
"Later."
He hurried off. Sheila's eyes got hard as she wiped her mouth with her sleeve and zipped up her jumpsuit.
"Don't hold your breath, creep," she said.
Sergeant Painter stepped out of the guardhouse to watch the sunrise. He took a deep breath of the cool morning air and then froze. He stared out at the high desert plain beyond the base perimeter.
"What the fuck?"
A motorcycle engine roared to life, the bellow from its striped pipes shattering the stillness of the dawn. Then another, and another, and another, like the thunder of the gods welling up out of the ground. Before him, less than a couple of hundred yards away, there was an unbroken line of motorcycles stretching out across the desert, hundreds of them, as if they had suddenly appeared from out of nowhere.
"Holy shit!"
A careening war whoop went up, and the bike surged forward in a cloud of dust, front wheels pawing at the sky. Painters turned to run back inside the guardhouse, and suddenly a machine pistol opened up from less than 30 feet away, a biker rising up from the ground and spraying bullets, stitching him across the back. Painter was hurled off his feet as the 45 caliber bullets struck him and exited through his chest. And at the moment that he died, a chain reaction of explosions went off as the charges that the sappers had planted took out large sections of the perimeter fencing. The troops were just starting to form up on the parade ground for Cord's announcement when the explosions went off and the thunder of the motorcycle engines filled the air. The Cobras responded instantly, running to repel the attack. The others scattered under shouted commands from their officers running to get their weapons, but the bikers had already penetrated the base. The guards had all been silently dispatched, and there had been no warning. Motorcycles hurtled through the base like two-wheeled missiles, their riders screaming like a horde of attacking Huns and firing at anything that moved.
"All right,"
said Higgins into his radio.
"Hit it. Move, move, move."
The truck surged forward, men with automatic weapons in their beds, as they jounced over the uneven ground toward the base in four-wheel drive. Higgins saw several planes coming in from the south, winging over the base. As he watched, small black dots came dropping out of the plane. He saw their chutes open as they came gliding in like a flock of kites.
Jesus, who the hell is that?
Shouted Higgins over the roar of the truck's engine. Hardesty glanced at him quickly.
You don't know?
No, they're not a part of this operation.
You figure Cord's bringing in reinforcements?
That's impossible. How the hell could he have known about the assault?
Hardesty glanced at him again as the truck lurched toward the base perimeter.
You think maybe somebody else had the same idea?
Higgins shook his head.
But how? Tracy, it's gotta be!
As Tracy came gliding in on his parachute, he heard Cash Carter's voice come over the radio.
Son of a bitch! The base is under attack! Looks like they're being hit by raiders!
Comprehension dawned instantly.
No! Tracy said. It's Higgins! It's the CIA!
CIA my ass!
Said Cash, gliding in just below him.
It's a goddamn motorcycle gang, for Christ's sake! We're dropping right into the middle of a war!
Who cares? Said Tracy, adrenaline trip hammering through his veins. They're on our side!
Shit!
Said Cash.
This is liable to get real interesting, people!
Hey, Cash!
Said Tracy, feeling an exhalation unlike anything he'd ever experienced before. If I get out of this alive, I'd like your permission to marry Casey!
Hell, kid! If we get out of this alive, I'll fucking marry you!
Tracy heard the laughter of the other men through his helmet, and his heart soared. It was crazy, but he had never felt so happy. Cord came barreling out of his mansion, strapping on his holster belt. Tyler was already on the porch when all hell had broken loose.
What the hell is going on? Demanded Cord.
We're under attack,
said Tyler. Suddenly a shot cracked out, and Cord swung around and fell against the door, a bullet through his shoulder. Tyler spun around, clawing his sidearm out of its holster. He saw Sheila's cameraman standing about 35 feet away, his arm held straight out. Instinctively, he dropped down and saw the muzzle flash for the compensated 10mm gun barrel protruding from the man's palm. The bullet whistled right over his head, and he instantly recalled where he had seen that face before. It was on television, all right, but the bastard was no reporter.
Steel!
He brought up his pistol and, remembering that the cyborg had bullet-resistant polymer skin over his torso, squeezed off three rapid shots, aiming at his face. Steel felt a bullet whistle past his right ear, then another one grazed his temple, and the third slammed right into the center of his forehead. His head snapped back from the impact as the bullet ricocheted off his nice steel skull casing, and he fell backwards.
Get out of here!
Tyler yelled at Cord, but the general was already way ahead of him. Ignoring the bullet wound in his shoulder, Cord had plunged straight into the house the moment he was hit. He ran straight for his desk. He grabbed a machine pistol from inside one of the drawers and a pouch full of magazines, which he slung over his shoulder. He grabbed the phone and stabbed at the buttons, calling the main launch control center.
This is Cord, he said the moment the phone was picked up. Implement Thor's hammer! Repeat! Thor's hammer! Right now!
Thor's hammer acknowledged, sir.
Cord slammed down the phone, and pausing to snatch a battle rifle from the wall, he leaped through the rear window of his office, smashing right through the glass. He hit the ground and rolled, wincing from the pain in his shoulder, and immediately started running. Gunfire was erupting all over the base, and glancing up, he saw parachutes in the sky above him.
Skeet! He said through gritted teeth. Skeet, you son of a bitch! I'm gonna burn your ass!
The two Cobra missile crew commanders sat down in their chairs inside the LCC the moment the sharp, high-pitched, oscillating note sounded over the speaker system.
Think it's a drill? One of them said.
Fuck if I know, the other said, holding his key.
We'll find out in a minute.
Attention. Attention.
Came the voice from the main launch control center.
Thor's hammer. Repeat. Thor's hammer.
Holy shit, said the missile crew commander. The fucking morons called us bluff. This is it.
The launch control code came on the display.
Insert keys and turn, said the missile crew commander.
Insert keys and turn.
Enter launch code.
Enter. Wait a minute.
What do you mean, wait a minute? Enter launch code.
It changed.
What? What do you mean it changed?
Look, it fucking changed.
What the hell? Fuck it. Enter what's on the display.
It just changed again.
What the hell?
The code changed again, and again, and again. Faster and faster and faster. The numbers started flashing by so quickly, they couldn't even read them.
The fuck is going on? Said the missile crew commander. What the fuck are they doing back there?
It must be a malfunction. Well, fix it! How the hell can I fix it? You mind telling me that? What the hell am I supposed to do?
Get on the phone! Call the main launch control center! Inside the main launch control center, Cobra Force Major Philip Hotzenbuehler stared at the consoles and then grabbed Dr. Stephen Franks by the back of his neck and spun him around.
What the hell do you do?
He shouted.
I didn't do anything, protested Franks. What's happening here? Why are those numbers flashing by like that?
I don't know, said Franks.
What the hell do you mean you don't know?
It must be a malfunction of some sort, but I've never seen anything like this.
Well, fix it!
Sure, said Franks.
How? What do you mean, how? You're the fucking expert!
I haven't gotten the faintest idea what's causing this, said Franks. I'm as at much of a loss as you are.
You did this, didn't you? You son of a bitch! You sabotaged the fucking system!
I tell you, the guy's out of truth, Major, said Franks. If I had known how to do this, I would have done it. But I don't know what's happening. I don't know how it happened. And frankly, I don't give a damn. But somehow, something's altering the launch codes on the order of about every hundredth of a second. And I haven't got the faintest idea what to do about it. If I didn't know any better, I'd swear someone managed to get a virus into the system. But I can't imagine how. It all looks like Thor's hammer's going to fail after all. Gee, that's a damn shame, isn't it?
Franks grinned. Hotzenbuehler punched him in the mouth. Franks fell upon the console and brought his hand up to his bloody lip.
You can hit me all you want, Major, but it's not going to change a thing. There's some sort of weird bug in the system, and tracking it down can take days, weeks, or even months.
I don't know why it happened or why, but I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. You want to try to launch those missiles, be my guest. But even if I knew how to help you, I wouldn't. So you can just go to hell!
The Major swore and picked up the phone, but there was no answer at General Cord's house. The paratroopers opened up with their assault rifles while they were still in the air. The troops below were in chaos. They couldn't even hear their own officers with all the noise going on around them. Motorcycles were roaring all through the camp, as well as trucks full of armed men firing wildly with their assault rifles and tossing grenades. The invaders were upon them before they had a chance to form any kind of defense. What they had in their hands was a melee, a riot, an every-man-for-himself street fight along the avenues of the base. Men died as they came running out of the barracks. Motorcycles crashed into buildings and slid across the asphalt, and showers of sparks from grinding metal exploding into flames. Tracy touched down and released his chute. A pickup truck came squealing to a stop in front of him. He brought his HK-94 around, but the men inside didn't fire at him.
Who the hell are you people?
Survivalists from the Estes Park Enclave, shouted Tracy. Who are you?
Federal Assault Force.
From Higgins of the CIA?
I'm Higgins.
I'm Tracy.
I'll be damned. Get in. Where's Cord?
I don't. Look out!
An automatic weapon clattered behind him as Tracy dropped to the ground, and Higgins fired his machine pistol out the window of the truck. Tracy looked over his shoulder and saw Pat Summers collapse to the ground, her rifle dropping from her grasp.
Oh no,
he said.
Come on, get in the truck.
Tracy jumped up and clambered into the back of the 4x4.
Where is the main launch control center?
That way, said Tracy, pointing.
The truck slewed around, laying rubber as hard as he spun the wheel. Steel rolled as he hit the ground, his eyes glowing red, as his laser designator switched on, the laser turret sliding out through the port in his left hand. He fired as he came up, and the brilliant beam of coherent light lanced out across the distance between him and Tyler, striking the Cobra agent right between the eyes. Tyler crumpled and fell down the stairs, a corpse before he hit the ground. Steel came up running. He smashed bodily through the door of Cord's mansion. There was no sign of Cord. He went through the lower floor, searching, and then he spotted the broken window.
Damn!
He said. Sheila Blaine crawled toward her van, yanked open the door, and lunged inside. She went to the back and grabbed the minicam, then went out the back door and started taping. Bullets smashed into the van beside her, and she cried out, dropping to the ground, barely holding onto the camera. She gritted her teeth and got back up, running low for the shelter of the nearest building. This was the story of her career, and she was damned if she was going to miss out on it. This was her ticket to Midtown. She took up a position at the corner of the officer's mess and started taping as motorcycles screamed past her. Trucks spun out. Automatic weapons fire erupted all around her, and people screamed and ran and fell and died. One of the bikers skidded out and ran right into a tree. She followed with her camera as his body went spinning through the air and fell like a wet dish rag to the ground. And suddenly, she found herself pointing her camera at another camera. She lowered the minicam and stared at the other cameraman while he did the same thing. Crouching beside him was a woman, speaking into a mic. She recognized her at once. Linda Tellerman, from New York. They spotted each other, and Linda and her cameraman ran across to her, narrowly avoiding being struck by a Jeep as it barreled past.
"What the hell are you doing here?" screamed Sheila. "This is my story!" "Who the hell are you?"
Linda shouted. Sheila identified herself.
"Honey, there's plenty here for both of us," shouted Linda. "Where's Steele?"
"I don't know."
"Well, find him. That's your story. We'll team up for this one, kid. You're going to New York with me."
"Hot damn."
"Go and keep your head down."
Cord made it to the NCO club and plunged through the door, firing at a biker who came barreling down toward him. The biker was blown right off his wheel and fell, bleeding, to the ground while his motorcycle continued on without him, to crash headlong into an adjacent building, roaring like a wounded beast. Cord ran to the phone and called the launch control center.
"Cord here," he said. "Did you implement Thor's hammer?"
"We can't, sir."
"What the hell do you mean you can't?"
"We've got some kind of malfunction. The system's gone completely haywire. We can't launch."
"Damn it."
Cord tore the phone out and hurled it across the room. He stood there, breathing heavily, bleeding from his wound, refusing to admit defeat. And then he realized that he still had a whole card. He ripped the empty magazine out of his machine pistol, slapped in a fresh one, and went to the door, checked around, and took off running, heading toward the train alert shelters. Raven rode in the truck beside Ice, firing her assault rifle through the window. And as they slid around the side of one of the buildings, she spotted Steele dropping down out of a window.
"It's Steele!"
she shouted.
"Stop!"
Ice brought the truck to a sliding stop in front of Steele.
"You get Cord?"
Ice said.
"No, he got away!"
Steele said, jumping onto the running board. Ice handed him a machine pistol and gunned the truck forward.
"I wounded him, though!"
"Can't have gone far,"
said Ice.
"Keep a lookout."
"Who the hell are those people who parachuted in?" asked Steele.
"Damn if I know,"
Ice said, sliding the truck around sideways as they came under fire from some soldiers concealed in a building. Steele sprayed the windows with the machine pistol as they raced past.
"Some party, huh?"
said Ice with a grin.
"You're enjoying this, aren't you?"
Steele said.
"Damn straight. I'm having me a fine time."
"You're a sick man, Ice."
"Watch it,"
Raven shouted. They swerved and narrowly avoided three bikers, but their speed was too great. And as the truck went sideways, it overbalanced and rolled. Steele was thrown clear. The truck rolled over three times and came to a rest on its side. Steele got to his feet and ran over to the battered vehicle.
"Are you all right?"
he yelled. Raven was crumpled up against the door, moaning.
"Banged my head,"
she said.
"I think I'm okay, though."
Ice was bleeding from a big gash in his forehead and several cuts on his face.
"Man, what happened?"
A motorcycle came roaring up behind Steele. He turned and saw that it was Snake.
"We got him on the run, man!" "Get out of here!" said Steele. "The truck could catch fire!"
"Yo, man," said Snake, "did you know a fucking train just pulled out of here?"
Steele turned.
"A train?"
"Yeah, came out of a big garage or something."
"The rail garrison," Steele said. "Cord, there's missiles on that train."
"Go,"
said Ice.
"Get on," said Snake. "We'll catch the sumbitch."
Steele hopped on behind the biker and Snake roared off in pursuit of the rail garrison train. Hotzenbühler heard the automatic weapons fire behind him and turned to see Higgins, Hardesty, and Tracy coming up through the door, along with several other men. He pulled his pistol from its holster, but Franks cried out,
"No!"
and lunged at him, knocking the pistol up. The shot went wild when the Cobra spun around, knocking Franks back and shooting him as he fell back against the console. Then his body jerked as Higgins fired his assault rifle and he fell dead to the floor. The other people in the control room all stood with their hands raised high above their heads. Tracy came running over to Franks. But one look at the wound told him it was lethal.
"Dr. Franks!"
he said.
"It's you," said Franks, blood frothing at his mouth. "You did it. You warned them."
"Yes, sir. I warned them. Thanks to you."
"Good
Boy, said Franks, and then the life went out of his eyes. Higgins glanced at the screen and saw the rapidly changing launch code numbers flashing by at incredible speed. He'd only seen computers act that way once before.
No, he said in a low voice. It couldn't have.
One of the other scientists came up to him.
Kurt tried to launch the missiles, he said, but the launch code suddenly started changing all by themselves. I can't account for it. I just don't understand what happened.
Higgins stared at him, then looked back at the screen. He sat down at the console. Could it be? He entered. Higgins to Matrix, please respond. Suddenly, the numbers stopped flashing past, and instead of numbers, letters appeared on the screen.
Matrix to Higgins, are you in control of the base?
I'll be damned, Higgins said in a low voice.
What is it?
Hardesty asked. Higgins ignored him. He entered. Base under control. Threat neutralized. The message came back.
Nice work. Thought you'd never get here.
Higgins sat back in the chair, staring at the screen.
What the hell was all that about?
Asked Hardesty. Higgins smiled, and then he started laughing. The Harley flew over the uneven terrain, Snake fighting to keep it under control, motocrossing the big bike with considerable skill as they gained on the missile train.
Come on, come on, shouted Steel. If he gets up to speed, we'll lose him.
Keep your shirt on. I'll get him, Snake said.
Inside the train, Cord knocked down the controls and raced back to the missile launch control car. He was weak from loss of blood, but he forced himself to keep on going. He wasn't going to let Skeet Higgins beat him. Not some damn office bureaucrat. He staggered onto the launch control car and lurched up to the console.
All right, get ready, Snake shouted.
He was pulling even with the rear of the train. Steel got up on the foot pegs, hanging onto Snake's shoulders as the bike bounced over the uneven terrain.
Get in closer! Hang on, man!
They pulled in close. He'd only have one chance. Steel took a deep breath and put one foot up on the seat, then launched himself at the train. The force of his jump caused Snake to lose control, and bike and rider tumbled to the ground, rolling over and over. Steel clamped his fingers into the railing of the maintenance car and held on for dear life. He glanced behind him and saw Snake staggering to his feet. The biker held up his arm, his hand closed in a fist, and stabbed it out toward him. Steel climbed up onto the roof of the car just as the launch platform was deployed. Wind bit at him as he ran across the cars. He reached the launch control car, leaped across, dropped down, and started ripping his way through the roof. Cord looked up from the console and brought up his machine pistol. Steel's laser cycled, and a bright, pencil-thin beam of light lanced down through the roof at Cord, striking him squarely in the heart. The machine pistol fired as Cord's finger tightened reflexively on the trigger, and then he collapsed against the console. Steel dropped down into the car and checked the body. Cord was dead. He exhaled heavily with relief.
Okay, he said to himself. I've stopped the war. Now all I've got to do is figure out how to stop this goddamn train.
End of chapter.